James Dodson is editor of the award-winning Pine Straw Magazine in Southern Pines, the arts and culture magazine of the Carolina Sandhills. He also serves as founding editor of O. Henry Magazine, the arts and culture sister publication in Greensboro, his hometown, and Salt Magazine in Wilmington. Jim recently invited a dozen of North Carolina's finest writers to each contribute one short piece dealing with the subject of summer to his August issues. After reviewing the depth and variety of what he received from the authors, even Jim Dodson, the best-selling author, Order of the Longleaf Pine recipient, and founding editor, was impressed. Chances are you will be too. The August issues of Pine Straw, Salt, and O. Henry Magazine hit stands this week. All 12 summer shorts pieces are true gems, and Jim dropped by to talk about them.
I wanted to do a thing called Summer Shorts Forever in our magazines, and those would be 800 to 1,000 word pieces. I didn't care if they were tone poems. I didn't care if they were epic poems, short stories, fiction, nonfiction. I wanted an evocation, each of them in their own wonderful words, to sort of pry open the kind of Pandora's box and let me look at something of summer. And that was the only directive I gave them. I don't care what you do. So we had Ruth Moose and Drew Perry and Angela Davis Gardner and Lee Zacharias, Clyde, of course, Edgerton, Dana Sachs and Virginia Holman and Lee Smith and Jill McCorkle. And every one of them took off and did something different. What I love, two things about this that when I started reading these, and again, my only directive was give me 800 words about summer.
Keep it simple.
They did. And you know what's fascinating? I was interested to see that probably a third of that 12, maybe even almost half, wrote about something in childhood. Isn't that interesting that summer just resonates most powerfully? It's this, what is it? It's like a lemonade commercial. It's a innocence of childhood or whatever. But they're really powerful stories. I mean, Drew Perry writes about, you know, the angst of being a young writer and failing. And Lee Smith writes this stunningly beautiful thing about how she and her best friend built a raft up in rural Virginia and were going to sail all the way down the river to Kentucky until her father, who ran the feed store, stood on the bridge and caught him and spanked him all the way home. And then there's others that are really, really dark. And Wiley Cash wrote a fabulous one about a kid on a bicycle leading him when he's supposed to not leave his yard, leading him off to find a body in the woods. And I found them completely mesmerizing. So,
as a writer, I think as any artist, I mean, the ultimate compliment to another artist is when they say to themselves, darn it, I wish I had come up with that. I'm sure there were a few of those moments in this collection, and given the caliber of the writers here, could you share one or two where either the angle, the story subject matter, the way it was presented, just kind of, as an artist yourself, just said, wow, I wish I had come up with that.
Yeah, I guess, you know, what I think links almost everything that we do, and we are a magazine that loves essays. We do a lot of essays by top writers. We turn them loose and give them their head or their voice and encourage that. What I think links these is a universality of experience. We all have had these experiences or some way or another. Wiley Cash's piece, perfect example. I couldn't leave my yard in Greensboro when I was 12 years old, and there was a bully who rode his bike by my house, and I had to face him down eventually. And in Wiley's case, the kid shows up and invites him to go riding his bike in the woods and wants to show him a body. It's fascinating to think that that's a good example. You know, as somebody who writes an essay every week myself for the magazines and the Sunday Pilot, I'd tell you that mining yourself, your life, is one of the most alternately wonderful and embarrassing things you can do. You sometimes feel like you're going to get to the bottom of the well. But as I just turned 61, and I would tell you, I haven't gotten there yet, and I've been doing this 20 years, so...
I'm so glad you began with that observation, Jim, because for me, and it kicks off right with one of the best in that department, Tony Abbott, and his ability to, like all these writers, as you said, collectively, like a great comedian, to take a moment that we all have shared at some level in our lives, but look at it through a lens that brings us deeper, or brings out a meaning that we never considered, as if we were experiencing it for the first time, and yet it's something we know so intimately well. Wonderful. And Tony does that with such a great economy of words in his first story here, which beginning with the fragrance of a different life. I just loved it.
It was. That's good. Well, stop and think about this. Tony's probably one of the best poets in America and a great friend. And even when you see him perform his poems, the mesmerizing, he just loves it. He makes you feel the joy of reading and hearing a poem. And you know what? Again, here's one written about from a teacher's perspective of remembering when he was a boy sent across the country and the summer was never particularly fun at first. It was kind of this going to a strange country. I mean, he was put on airplanes and flown across through storms, and then he was sent across the country and trained. And he finally grew. It wasn't really till he became a teacher of his own and we had children, sons of his own, that he discovered the kind of tranquil summer, you know, the value of a summer on a lake. And it sort of soothed his soul. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful meditation.
I love the way Tony, like all these authors, savors the moment. And I look at Clyde Edgerton's work and the grandstand.
Yeah.
In his summer reminiscence, Clyde combines, as always, great humor with tragedy and even poetry. I wanted to share this one line that just jumped off the page for me. He's talking about this grandstand in his old neighborhood. And it was cool under the grandstand, especially if a breeze blew across the shaded red clay. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
No, it doesn't. And of course, he's one of our finest writers and a great wit and someone who I think does what something I love. And I think it's sort of a tradition in Southern writing, a la Harry Cruz, if anybody's old enough to remember Harry Cruz. He sort of edges into the kind of real raw South, the kind of working South that a lot of us who grew up here knew if you lived in a mill town. And I used to ride my bike. I played for Pet Dairy on the south side of Greensboro, and you took your life in your hands riding your bike to baseball practice, especially if you were a tow-headed middle-class kid like I was. But I had friends whose fathers slapped their mothers around and drank beer on the porch. And, you know, that South, I think, that's why I love these pieces. There's a kind of patrician South here. There's also the small-town South. There's the suburban South. Dana Sachs, who's one of the best writers in America, teaches writing at UNCW, and she has this amazing piece about running through the bars barefoot illegally with her best friend in Memphis growing up on these hot nights and barefoot and black feet on the from the bars. You know, those are things we can all relate to. We all did them. And maybe that's what summer is this kind of living metaphor for letting go and testing our boundaries.
I love the fact you don't gloss over anything. I mean, it's all out there, and that's I guess that's what gets at the heart of the magazine. You're going local in a big way, in the best way. It's locally grown, and the perspective, you can't replace that. You can't fake it.
No. Last month, we had dogs, and that came about purely because a big lunch one afternoon, and we had in Greensboro, and we had a bunch of people had their dogs. It was a burger joint, and everybody brought their dogs, and somebody said, you know, we were all laughing. We were actually telling our stories about our stray and foundling dogs. And I think that's where good stories come from. From the earliest caves when people sat around fires and entertained themselves or gave their children moral instruction through stories, you know, we've always entertained ourselves. I had the real distinct pleasure of going to see Eudora Welty before she died, obviously, down in Mississippi when I was the senior writer of the Atlanta Constitution magazine. And I sat with her and I asked her a bunch of questions. And finally, I just said to her, Ms. Welty, why are there so many good Southern writers? And she looked at me and she said, darling, it's just real simple. There's porches. And what she meant was, of course, is that before an age of air conditioning and even oscillating fans, people went to their porch to sit and cool off in the evening, and they had to entertain themselves. There was no TV. There was no, you know, there was no Game Boys. There was nothing except conversation. And that's, I feel like my vision for these magazines was that we would be having conversations on a porch and telling stories that really mean something. And so they can cross the borders of your art, your favorite garden, or your family history, or something that changed your life, or what's going on in your city at that moment. You know, a big movement, an arts movement, or a great artist. They're all stories, and that's our goal, is to make them as illuminating and fun to read as possible.
Well, and as someone who's, the magazine's namesake, O. Henry, knew a thing or two about writing the short story, I'm wondering from a writer's perspective, because you've done both. You've done long form, you've done magazine, you've done journalism. For the composer, they say, the great composers, that they'd rather write a symphony than a string quartet, that paring it down to those bare essentials is actually more of a challenge. Not that it's important, but how do you group the two?
Well, that's a great question, and I'll tell you, I was the writer-residence at Hollins, which is a wonderful writing school. Annie Dillard and Tama Janowitz and Lee Smith and Jill McCorkle all came out of there. Great school, and I was a little intimidated, quite honestly, because I thought they really wanted me to teach much more of the long form. I taught biography and historical writing and essays and memoir. And halfway through the course, I started talking about the short form, that the real challenge, I had an old professor in college tell me, the hardest thing is to write a complete, beautiful piece in, I think he said, 700 words. that tells me a story and sews it up. He called it, every story has an element of circularity. It's like that moth. It floats out over the yard. It explores the bushes. It goes for a little dip through the woods, and it comes back to the screen. You've got to do that with the reader. And I think the hardest thing, as I've always told students, is knowing what to leave out. It's more important to know what to leave out of a story than what to put in sometimes. Because here's one principal cardinal reason why. You cannot compete with a reader's imagination. So I say it was a cold and empty parking lot. You immediately conjure up a cold and empty parking lot from your own memory or whatever. If I say it was sleeting hard and the windows were misted over and it turned to a cold rain and my feet were numb with cold and my nose was running, it's like, whoa, that's way too much information. So a great writer, the people that do this best in terms of profession are old sports writers. Because like poets, economy of words mattered to them. They had to tell the story and give you a simple image. So the truth is, that's a hard form. And you're absolutely correct. Like your composer friends, in some ways it's much easier to make a symphony of words than it is a brief, what would the comparison be, etude?
An etude? That's right. There you go.
Hey, I'm an old guitar player.
Okay. Well, and of course, that's exactly what you've done for all these authors, mm-hmm. is given them the great writers, poets, has given them mm-hmm. the supreme challenge. And they've come through in spades. And I got to say, for my money, one of the greatest examples was Blasphemy by Stephen Smith.
Oh, gosh.
What an amazing combination of, he sustains mm-hmm. tension better than the movie Alien did for me with this little boy.
Yeah.
And at the same time provides this hilarious, a Christmas story-like guffawing yeah. moment. I mean,
exactly.
Amazing work.
How many of us have, I had the exact experience at First Lutheran Church on Friendly Avenue in Greensboro when I was an acolyte, except I got up there, lit the tapers, and I'm not going to give the essay away, but I can't turn around, and they'd not opened the gate, so I was stuck with a burning taper, and it was the first time I was an acolyte, and I looked around desperately. One minister was asleep, the other people was a hot summer day.
He just went for the hook.
I climbed over.
Oh,
and I caught my robe and almost fell. So when I read that, you talk about that universality, I was like, holy cow, I was there, I was that kid. So yeah. It was a great story.
Any story that can transport you like that's
absolutely
a good one. And I should say that there's a beautiful mix of tragedy and humor, and then we get this beautiful yet very dark swimming novels by Angela Davis Gardner, and the swimming pool, the summer pool. What a great setting for just seeing life slowly passing by over time.
Well, and the fact that she blends this passion. First time I read that, I thought, was she on LSD? Because it was so beautifully mixed. Here's the story of riders and swimmers getting off the block and rider's block. And she's swimming against her brother, and her father's the coach, and the coach is saying, do this, do this, do this. I think her father really was a terrific writer for the News and Record. And like me, she's a newspaper brat. So suddenly you have this beautiful, strange, eerie story that anybody who's a writer can relate to about feeling the pressure to produce. Right now, I have a book that's a month overdue at Simon & Schuster, and I'm expecting my editor to be out there with a baseball bat when I leave the studio here today. So you feel this panic. You've got to get it done. It's got to be good. And will they like it? And will they reject it? So it plays on all the insecurities of any writer, but it's a beautiful metaphorical piece about growing up. And then I'm dying to tell the end of when they swim out to sea, but it's just a beautiful thing. I thought it was it was so different from everything else. Lee Smith's beautiful evocation of small town Virginia. Jill McCorkle's about being with her grandmother in the garden and how she's never gone into a garden in the summer without thinking of her grandmother. These are real. You can smell the soil in those. You can feel the texture of plants. And here you have this other one that's about swimming, and every kid that's ever beat their brains out in a pool and gotten sick of the smell of chlorine and had a coach yelling at them will relate to it. So it's really great.
It's intense. I'm so glad you mentioned your publisher, Simon & Schuster, and should point out that Angela Davis Gardner, also published by Simon & Schuster, and all of these authors, from Tony Abbott on down, you get the best available today. There.
Well, thanks. And honestly, that's our goal. And I would say that this is a great way to celebrate our third anniversary. We have some really wonderfully fun and adventurous things coming up, things that we hope constantly both feel familiar to people, but also challenge them and amuse them and make them realize how much we love being here and we don't take it for granted.
Well, Jim, thanks so much for stopping by and sharing it with us.
David, it's my pleasure as always to see you and be with you.
James Dodson is editor of the award-winning Pine Straw Magazine in Southern Pines, Salt Magazine in Wilmington, and he's founding editor of O. Henry Magazine, the arts and culture sister publication in Greensboro, his hometown. You'll find summer shorts in all three August issues, which hit the stands this week. There's a link to more information at WFDD.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend. Jim's recent book is American Triumvirate, How Ben Hogan, Sam Snead, and Byron Nelson Created the Modern Age of Golf. It's now in its third printing by Knopf, and he's got a new book on the way.